mornings, I'm Chris Oaks, and coming up today, state leaders have said they want to make Ohio the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. But how much electricity will it take to power the supercomputers that will be needed to make that happen? And where will it come from? Also this morning, in the battle over U.S. energy policy, advocates of alternative power sources argue that the country stands at a pivotal moment to invest in renewables. And in our salute to service this morning, Miracles on a Mountainside. The National Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic gives participants the chance to be more than they ever thought they could be. This is the Good Mornings Podcast Edition for Monday, April 7th, 2025. Here is some big news. I saw this on the state newswire this morning. The Ohio Division of Unclaimed Funds is launching a new online system to make collecting money easier. State officials say they hope the process will allow more Ohioans to get their portion of the nearly $5 billion in unclaimed money that is being held by the Division of Unclaimed Funds. They want to get this back into your hands. The website now allows users to search for money they could be owed through things like closed bank accounts and utility deposits, and then file an online claim. To search the site, go to unclaimedfunds.ohio.gov. That is the website. So apparently a new website. And I mean, I know they've had a website before, but apparently they've made it easier to get your unclaimed funds, if you have any. And you'll probably need them very soon because those tariffs are set to take effect this week. This is the story that everybody was talking about last week. It's going to be huge in the news this week, as well as those tariffs are set to take effect on Wednesday. And consumers are bracing for higher prices on just about everything. The big question everybody wants to know is, how soon will we feel the impact? And it turns out that the answer is not really all that clear cut. According to economists, retailers basically have three choices. They can absorb the cost, they can split the difference with consumers, or pass on the full cost of the tariffs onto consumers. So which direction they go will largely depend on how big their margins are to begin with. Things like food and electronics, there are generally thin profit margins in those product categories, so you'll probably see bigger price hikes than on things like, cars or appliances, that kind of thing, which have larger, generally speaking, larger profit margins. So timing is the other big question. When are we going to see the price hikes? Well, again, it kind of depends on the product category. For some, like food, that's a perishable item, so you can't really stockpile inventory ahead of the tariffs taking effect. So, according to Leo Feller, chief economist at Numerator, the timeline that shoppers may encounter for these tariff-induced price increases, it could be days or weeks before we start to see fresh food prices, especially things like produce, start to go up. So that'll be the first thing to hit because, again, they're perishables. You can't stockpile inventory and all of that. So very quickly, we'll see those prices go up. And then within maybe 3 months or so, we'll start to see increases on packaged foods and alcohol. And then within 6 months, assuming nothing changes with the tariffs, which is always possible, within 6 months, we'll see increases on things like clothing, appliances, and cars once the retailer's supply begins to run out. So, bottom line, they say now is the time to think about maybe any big ticket items you may need in the next 12 to 18 months. Things like TVs, cars, appliances, outdoor furniture, electronics. Here's the ironic twist in this. Those retailers for big ticket items know that consumers would be motivated to buy. And so you may actually see extra good deals, sales on those things ahead of the tariff-induced price hikes. For example, Ford recently announced their From America for America promotion, where they're offering employee prices, typically reserved for company workers only, and they're extending that to all customers through June 2nd. Saw a lot of ads on TV over the weekend for that. So trying to, if they figure you're going to buy them anyway, you're looking to buy them anyway, they want you to buy from them versus the competition. And also, they say, if you are thinking, maybe you should start thinking back to school. I know we're not even to summer break yet, but if you've got things you're going to have to pick up for back to school for your kids, you might want to shop earlier this year for that as well. So some of the things you might want to keep in mind with respect to those tariffs and when we will see that. So what did you do over the weekend? Did you have a good weekend? My wife and I actually were out of town all weekend. We were helping our son and daughter-in-law move into their new house and move from just north of Columbus to just east of Columbus. Let me tell you, boy, a lot of rain last week and over the weekend. We did not get as much as what they got in central Ohio. I mean, wow, the amount of standing water, flooded fields and roadways that were closed. Just amazing in central Ohio. Nothing like what we saw here, but I digress. I bring it up because I saw this on the Newswire this morning. A new study suggests that weekend warriors who exercise intensively on one or two days on the weekend can actually achieve the same health benefits as those who work out regularly through the week. My wife and I got our workout this weekend helping the kids move. Researchers found that as long as individuals accumulate 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity each week, their risk of cardiovascular disease, cancer, and premature death reduces significantly. It doesn't matter whether you get that 150 minutes of moderate to vigorous physical activity over the weekend or spread out through the entire week. They showed that both weekend warriors and steady exercisers had lower mortality risks compared to inactive individuals. So here you go. If you are one that, if you're kind of like me, you sit around for the most part through the week and don't do much, and then over the weekend you get a lot of physical activity, that's okay too. The bottom line, what they're trying to tell you is anything is better than nothing. So inactivity is the worst thing you can do. So let's see. Those spring showers that we've been getting definitely indicate that a change of season is coming. And as we welcome the warming spring air, seasonal allergy sufferers are facing a daunting pollen tsunami that is leaving millions battling sneezing, headaches, watery eyes, stuffed sinuses. They say this is going to be another nasty spring for all of that. Record-breaking pollen counts have been reported in cities like Atlanta and Houston, indicating a particularly brutal year for seasonal allergies. And they say climate change is easy for me to say on a Monday. Climate change is exacerbating the situation. They say pollen is emerging earlier and in higher concentrations and is lasting longer each year. The rising carbon dioxide levels are directly influencing plants to produce more pollen, they say. So that's how we're going to kill ourselves, apparently, with climate change. That's how we're going to kill ourselves, because we're going to pollinate ourselves to death with people with seasonal allergies and all that. That's the thing. And lastly, here among the first things that you need to know this morning, the most interesting and buzzworthy stories of the day. This is something to think about as you get your week started. A new study from researchers in Australia and Singapore reveals that the underlying reasons driving our goals have a significant impact on our overall happiness. So let me repeat that. The underlying reasons that drive us to strive to reach our goals has a significant impact on our overall happiness. They say cultural backgrounds play a key role as well. Results of this research show that pursuing goals for personal joy or meaningful connections with others leads to greater well-being, irrespective of what those goals may be. If you are pursuing the goal for personal joy or a meaningful connection with others, that leads to greater well-being. In contrast, individuals who are driven by avoidance or external pressures tend to experience lower levels of happiness. The study unveils cultural variations in how motivations influence well-being, challenging assumptions about individualism and collectivism. But the bottom line, and what's worth considering this morning as you head into a new work week, whatever goals you have set for yourself this week, examine, take a look in the mirror and examine why you have set those goals. Is it because of external pressure or because of your own internal motivation for overall happiness or personal joy? Because those are the ones that actually will lead to true happiness. Out there to think about. Some of the most interesting and buzzworthy stories to get your Monday morning started.
WFIN News, I'm Matt Demchek. Your WTOL 11 weather, partly sunny and windy today with a high around 50, partly cloudy tonight, low in the middle 20s. The Ohio State Highway Patrol is reminding drivers to keep their eyes on the road.
April is National Distracted Driving Awareness Month. New data from the Highway Patrol shows between 2020 and 2024, there have been more than 50,000 crashes in the state of Ohio alone involving a distracted driver. 167 deaths and more than 26,000 people were injured. Officials say the message is simple. Stay focused, put the phone down, and keep your eyes on the road.
WTOL 11's Jeff Smith reporting. Findlay City Schools this week will be holding a second town hall on the district's finances ahead of the May levy. The school district says at the town hall meeting, community members will hear accurate information straight from the superintendent, treasurer, and members of the Board of Education.
And so we are at this crossroads as a community. What community do we want to have? What kind of school district do we want to have?
That's District Superintendent Dr. Andy Hatton. In February, the school district held a town hall on the district's finances and financial challenges following the failed levy last November, which resulted in a $6.1 million budget reduction. The Findlay City Schools Board of Education recently shared what a second phase of potential budget reductions would look like should the district's 1% earned income tax levy on the May 6 ballot not pass. Get more in this story on our website. The executive director of the Marathon Center for the Performing Arts, Heather Clough, has been selected as a member of the Creative Ohio Advocacy Leadership Institute, a new initiative designed to empower arts leaders across the state with advocacy skills, legislative insights, and statewide connections. Get more in this story on our website. The city of Findlay says the Public Works Department will be picking up limbs and sticks from the recent storms that are placed in front lawns beside the road over the next several weeks. The city's also reminding residents that the green waste site at 330 North Corey Street recently opened for the season. Remember, you can get more news online anytime at WFIN.com.
Well, you remember when Intel announced its multi-billion dollar investment to make microchips at a new plant in New Albany? The governor talked about making Ohio the Silicon Valley of the Midwest. And indeed, there has been a concerted effort to attract technology ventures to the state. And there is one area where that has indeed been quite successful. I looked it up, and there are currently 179 data centers located in Ohio, including some of the biggest players like Google and Meta and Amazon. And experts predict that demand for new data centers will increase by 33% a year moving forward, each year. But there is an issue meeting the incredible energy demand that these facilities require. And joining us this morning is David Holt. He is president of the Consumer Energy Alliance. And David, you point out that we are already seeing a tremendous growth in energy demand, not just in Ohio, but around the country, largely as a result of technology like these data centers.
Chris, you've hit the nail on the head. We are embarking on the next great global revolution, you know, the AI revolution. And this administration and many others, you know, say that the United States really needs to win the AI revolution and have, you know, AI really be housed here in the United States. And our primary competitor with AI, of course, is China.
Right.
So, the administration and other leaders around the country, both industrial business leaders and governmental leaders, have really prioritized AI. And your point that AI is very energy intensive is spot on. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
One Google search today, if you and I did a Google search, that let's say that uses one unit of energy. A Google search using AI uses 10 units of energy. So it's 10 times as energy intensive as a typical Google search today. And then the next two or three years, every single Google search is going to be an AI generated Google search. So these large data centers that must cool and provide electricity to all these servers, they're you know, big box stores, they're wall to wall with servers that are powering this AI revolution. And they just use a lot of energy. So making sure that the country and the Midwest and Ohio and in Virginia and in the Tennessee Valley and in Texas and in Wyoming and Montana and all these other areas around the country that are becoming AI hubs, making sure that they have sufficient power is in the national interest. It's a national security issue now, really.
And of course, in addition to that, this is, in addition to all of the other ways that we use energy for everything else in society on a daily basis, which is also growing.
Absolutely right. You know, so we've seen a couple of things over the last couple of years. And, you know, when President Trump, his first day in office, he declared an energy emergency. Mm-hmm. And that was really for two reasons. One, the price of energy for electricity, for gasoline and diesel had been very high in the previous several years. So what can we do to maximize energy resources, to remove red tape, to remove redundant regulations, to get the energy sector going again, to lower prices? We've already seen some relief there. Grocery prices are down because, you know, energy delivers groceries, energy packages groceries. So if you lower energy costs, then grocery prices and commodities go down. So that's one good thing. The second thing is, you know, meeting the energy demands, as we just discussed, of this AI revolution. So
right.
You've got to have, we've been investing a lot in wind and solar, but wind and solar are not what the industry calls baseload power. And baseload power means power that's kind of always available and can ramp up for really hot days. Are really cold days, or to meet the energy challenges of AI. So baseload power is really natural gas right now, and eventually it's going to be nuclear. And we're seeing in Ohio and in other states more conversation around nuclear power and how to bring that back with these advanced technology nuclear facilities, how to use them for baseload power. So while wind and solar provide some power around the margins, we really need to make sure that we have enough power being generated by natural gas powered utilities, and then eventually very soon nuclear, because that's going to be the key linchpin to ensuring that we have all the power we need in our daily lives, all the power we need on those really cold winter nights, and all the power we need for this AI revolution.
You talk about, regulation and legislation with respect to energy issues. Right now, as I'm sure you are aware, there are a pair of energy bills that are moving through the Ohio legislature in House Bill 15 and Senate Bill 2 that would, among other things, streamline the approval process for new energy facilities. I'm assuming you support this legislation?
We do. Listen, anything that, from our perspective, so Consumer Energy Alliance represents families and small businesses and truck drivers and the airline industry and manufacturers and farmers and literally every sector of the economy. So anything that removes red tape in a safe, responsible way, that helps reduce energy costs, that makes energy more reliable, that makes our grid more resilient, and always is looking for efficiency and making energy clean, we support. So there are anything that we can do from a state perspective out of Washington, D.C., and even local communities that helps us harness all available resources. We're an all of the above organization, and we need all of this. So streamlining permitting, bringing more capability and capacity online quickly is absolutely in individual families' interest, business interest, personal security. We don't want to have a brownout or a blackout on a hot day or God forbid, a very, very cold winter night when, you know, lives could be somewhat at risk. So anything that the state can do to help streamline that process, improve the permitting process, bring more capability and capacity online is something we would support.
What about critics who point out that HB 15 and SB 2 do nothing to address energy efficiency and reduce waste? They say not only would that lower costs, but also would reduce demand at a fraction of the cost of generating more electricity and in turn more waste. What role does increased efficiency have to play in all of this?
It plays a large role, and energy is becoming more and more efficient every day. Innovation, new technology to help environmental performance around energy, ways that you can extract more from a barrel of oil or an individual unit of electricity from wherever it comes from. You know, one industry has a role and a desire to make energy more efficient because that helps them with cost control.
Mm-hmm.
You want to make sure your grid is efficient, and we're always investing enough in the grid to modernize that. That's got to be efficient. All these things play a role, but. The emergency situation we have at the state level and around the country is bringing enough kilowatt hours of dispatchable permanent energy to market so that consumers and families and businesses have sufficient power.
That's the bottom.
So that's expanding existing utility and power generation. That's adding new permanent baseload power, and that's augmenting what we already have. So bringing that on while you're becoming more energy efficient, all of that has to be part of the game.
That's the bottom line. You also mention the grid, investing in the grid. And for many years, we have also heard about the aging of our energy infrastructure. Again, not just in Ohio, but nationwide. Given this incredible increase in demand, again, for technology and just in everyday use, what's the investment that is going to be needed to make sure that this energy can be delivered reliably to where it is needed, when it is needed, be that Ohio or elsewhere?
Fantastic question. And every local jurisdiction has its own issues. Some states have had some legislation in recent years that, in a sense, robs Peter to pay Paul, that was providing some incentives for one energy resource that folks could afford to take advantage of that incentive would do so, but it would also inadvertently rob from investment in the grid. So we've got some makeup to do across the country to make sure that our grid is as modern as it should be, is as resilient as it needs to be, because we have seen across the country an increase of what industry calls intermittency days, which really are days where a governmental body will come out to its citizens and say, hey, we're going to have a really hot day this year, this week. Conserve your electricity, raise your thermostat, don't recharge your electric vehicle, things like that. So in 2020, we had about 120 intermittency days warning of brownouts or blackouts around the country. Last year, we had about 340 of those. So you already could see the trend that we as a society, largely policies that allow for utilities and others to upgrade the grid, we were a little bit behind. So what you're seeing within Ohio and elsewhere is legislatures recognizing that now and doing some things they can to try to catch up. It's something that we can catch up, but we need to start now, and we need to kind of get ahead of this situation.
And, of course, there is a cost associated with that as well. So many different dynamics to this, but really emphasizing the importance of focusing on energy policy moving forward. Again, David Holt is president of the Consumer Energy Alliance. David, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
I really appreciate it. Thank you.
So now continuing our conversation on U.S. energy policy this morning, as we were talking about earlier, electricity demand in this country is projected to surge by as much as 50% over the next decade or so, driven largely by the demands of data centers, along with other things like increased domestic manufacturing, the continued electrification of our automotive fleet, just to name a couple of examples. And while many argue that by necessity, this means fossil fuels will remain an indispensable part of the equation for the foreseeable future, the American Clean Power Association says the country also stands at a pivotal moment to invest in renewable energy. Joining us now is Frank Macchiarola, Chief Advocacy Officer for the American Clean Power Association. Frank, advocates of conventional energy say that renewables are not baseload power sources, that we still have to build our energy system, if you will, around conventional sources such as oil and gas. Are they right?
Chris, we need everything. You just laid out the energy demand that we face. It's daunting. It's 40% increase or 50% increase potentially by 2040. To put that into some context, we've had 25 straight years of basically flat demand in this country. And so we need much more than the traditional energy resources that we've relied on. We need new, renewable, clean power sources. We need more and more of it. We need wind, solar, battery storage. We currently produce about 16% of our electricity from those sources, but that's going to grow. Last year alone, 93% of new capacity built came from those sources. That's about those sources saw a 33% increase in their deployment year over year. And so, you know, a lot of the debate is about either or, and that's just the wrong way to look at it. We need everything. We need resources to complement one another to meet the challenge that we face.
You're talking, you laid out a couple of numbers there, and that was actually going to be one of the questions I wanted to ask, because it seems like everyone we talk to on this subject from both sides talks about an all-of-the-above strategy. And indeed, you are just recently out with a report which advocates a mix of energy sources, but all-of-the-above means different things to different people. What's the ratio? I mean, you talked about 19% nationwide is kind of where we are now. Where do we need to be? Is it 30% renewables, 50%, 70%? How and to what extent do those energy sources intertwine?
Yeah, it's a great question, Chris. It's not so much hitting a number and saying, okay, now we have the right mix. It's having a diversity of energy resources to our portfolio mix.
Fair.
The reason is because all of those resources have varying attributes that make them in some cases better than others, but in other cases, you know, they don't have a particular strength, right?
Fair
one
enough.
May be more energy dense, one may be cleaner, one may have a greater be more prolific in one particular area in the U.S. and not have as much abundance in another area. So much like everything in life, right? We need a diversity of fuels to power our electricity and in our transportation space. And look, we need to diversify our economy across a lot of different areas. Energy is one of them. We need more and more wind, battery storage, solar. The great attribute of those is that it's clean energy, right? It produces no emissions. It is, we have the ability to build them fast, right? So these clean energy projects can come to the grid much quicker, which is very important right now because we need that energy right now.
Yeah, you made a good point earlier that last year was a record year for renewable energy coming online in the U.S. But as you know, the priority has shifted. There are fewer federal investments, fewer incentives, fewer subsidies coming from this administration. Can you still reach your goals without those investments, incentives, and subsidies?
Yeah, we're confident that the market is going to continue to dictate that we need more energy, and more of that energy is going to come from clean power. But I think this administration should use history as a cautionary tale. We've seen past administrations that have talked about all of the above and then implemented policies that are akin to some of the above, right? They've decided to restrict certain resources. And then when demand rises and prices rise, all of a sudden they say, we need more energy, we need everything. The fact is, we can't eliminate one or another of our energy resources. We need to utilize all of the resources that we have in this country, rely on the strength that we have to be able to enhance American competitiveness, to be able to continue to fuel the economy that we have and want to have out into the future. And as I said, it's clear the data shows that we need more clean power into the mix. And so we're ready to deploy that.
Advocates such as yourself for renewables have been highly critical of legislation in Ohio that you say actively disincentivizes and handicaps the development and the deployment of clean energy in our state. I want to kind of bring this down to the state level here. And you say that is short-sighted given the expansion of clean power can be a major job driver, an economic driver. What does it mean economically?
Yeah, absolutely. We use enough clean power in Ohio to power 1 million homes. 80% of the economic and capital investment and economic growth as a result of clean energy tax credits actually occur in states and districts that supported President Trump. You noted that I'm a clean energy advocate. Actually, throughout my career, I've been an oil and gas advocate. I've been a clean energy advocate. I'm an advocate for American energy. I'm currently advocating for clean power because we need clean power to help drive our economic growth, to create the jobs that are necessary to meet the energy demand that we face. We need all of the above in this country. And I just think the debate about choosing one over the other really misses the mark. It's like it would be a debate. It would be akin to a debate like, should we choose cars or airplanes? We actually need both.
Yeah.
They both serve a purpose for our transportation needs.
Yeah.
And we need both. Well, we need clean power and we need those traditional forms of energy.
Well, let me ask you this about the infrastructure side of this. And again, you were talking about this a little bit earlier. I want you to kind of expand on this a bit. What is the investment? We have heard, as we were talking about earlier, we have heard for years that we need warnings about our aging infrastructure. We need major investments in this. What about the infrastructure question? What is the investment that will be needed to make sure that this energy can be delivered reliably where it is needed, whether that's in Ohio or elsewhere?
Yeah, it's a great question. We need investments in infrastructure for pipelines, for gas from where it's produced to where it's needed, for transmission lines to be able to move renewables across the country and to be able to deploy that power that we need. We also need permitting reform to be able to site those things. The government takes way too long to be able to cite the projects that we need for this clean energy. So, it's a big challenge that we face, but I hope the debate shifts from whether to how. It's not a question of whether we need oil and gas or whether we need wind, solar, and battery storage. It's how we're going to deploy them faster to be able to meet the needs of the American people. If we can shift the debate to that, we can make a lot of progress in this country.
Again, Frank Macchiarola is Chief Advocacy Officer for the American Clean Power Association, talking energy this morning, how much we need, where it's going to come from as we move forward into the future. Frank, thanks very much for taking the time. We appreciate it.
Sure. Thank you. Appreciate it.
This is Good Mornings with Chris Oakes on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
We interrupt this program to bring you a broken news alert.
You talk about escalating a situation right here. Kenneth DiGiorgio faces an assault charge stemming from an altercation on a cruise ship this past week that was sailing in international waters near Martinique. Here is the story. Mr. DiGiorgio apparently was involved in an altercation that began when his wife asked a barefoot dancer at a cocktail lounge to put on her shoes. Apparently, a woman was dancing barefoot, and this upset Mr. DiGiorgio's wife, who confronted this individual, said, "Put on your shoes." The incident then escalated when Mr. DiGiorgio allegedly choked the man in response to him disrespecting his wife. Choked the man. Following the altercation, the ship's captain instructed Mr. DiGiorgio to stay in his stateroom until the ship arrived in Puerto Rico the following day. He was sent to his room without any supper. FBI agents in Puerto Rico attempted to interview Mr. DiGiorgio, but he declined to submit to an interview and answer any questions. By the way, I should mention that Kenneth DiGiorgio happens to be the CEO of First American Financial Corporation. Is it really that big of a deal that somebody was dancing barefoot in the lounge, in the cocktail lounge on the cruise ship? Is it worth all of that? But that's what happened, apparently. Wow. You talk about escalating a situation right there. Man. Elsewhere in the broken news this morning, Dateline Gainesville, Florida, where police, in collaboration with Walmart Asset Protection, in other words, security at Walmart, police in collaboration with Walmart Security, have arrested a man for allegedly committing thefts at multiple stores. The accused is suspected of targeting various Walmart outlets in northern Georgia, with the total stolen goods exceeding $20,000. So this was quite the crime spree. $20,000 in goods stolen from these various Walmart stores. Suspect in question faces theft charges and has been detained on multiple felony offenses. The name of the perpetrator, and I'm not kidding about this, it is actually this guy's name, 40-year-old Speedy Gonzalez. Speedy Gonzalez is the guy's actual name. I actually had to look that up on multiple sources just to make sure that that was in fact the case. But yes, his name is Speedy Gonzalez. Wow. I wondered what Speedy Gonzalez was up to, you know, since they're not making new cartoons anymore. Apparently, he's fallen on hard times. So, kind of feel sorry for it. Not to be outdone, in Clearwater, Florida, a man unhappy with the customer service at a lemonade stand now faces felony charges. This guy apparently happened upon some kids who were selling lemonade there in Clearwater. After paying for one glass, he then became angry when he was not allowed to refill his cup. Apparently, the lemonade did not come with free refills, and that upset him. The Pinellas County Sheriff's Office says in an affidavit that the man allegedly grabbed the wrist of the attendant at the lemonade stand and threatened to beat her up. The kid's lemonade stand. Threatened to beat her up. He then fled the scene before being arrested, whereupon he reportedly told the cops that the victim was talking trash to him. Yeah, the little girl with the lemonade stand was the one that was talking trash and started the whole thing. I'm sure. He has pleaded not guilty to felony battery. Throw the book at this guy. I mean, honestly. Come on. Come on, man. It's crazy. Let's see. Elsewhere in the broken news, authorities in Pahrump, Nevada have confiscated 7 tigers from a man's residence after executing a search warrant. Carl Mitchell, the owner, is said to have been violating county regulations and permits for several years. During the operation, Mr. Mitchell was charged with resisting an officer, leading to his arrest following a physical altercation. The Nye County Sheriff, Joe McGill, emphasized that the seizure was essential for public safety and for the safety of the animals, especially after Mr. Mitchell made several threatening statements. So why did he have 7 tigers? He claimed that they were emotional support animals due to his military-related PTSD. 7 tigers as emotional support animals. All right. That's what he says. Stay tuned. Apparently, this is not the first run-in with Mr. Mitchell. He has had previous legal battles for lacking the proper permits to keep the exotic animals. So, or emotional support animals. Okay. And finally, in the broken news this morning, the story of American influencer Truett Haynes, who apparently is something of a celebrity online. I don't know who this person is, but maybe you do. Truett Haynes has now reclaimed the Guinness World Record for, are you ready for this? The most pull-ups in 24 hours. His initial record was surpassed by a man in Australia, but Mr. Haynes has persevered and reestablished the record by completing 10,001 pull-ups in 24 hours. 10,000 pull-ups and one within the 24-hour period. He said, quote, "What I learned about myself is this. I won't give up. I wasn't blessed with unique ability or super strength, and things have never really come easily to me, but I have been gifted the ability not to give up on my goals. Even if it takes years, I'll see it through until it's completed." 10,000 pull-ups in 24 hours. I can't even do 10 in 24. I mean, never mind 10,000 and one. That's crazy. That is crazy. People with far too much free time on their hands, let me tell you, there you go. That is today's broken news. An update on the odd and unusual side of the headlines. We now return you to your regularly scheduled programming.
Primary Election Day is Tuesday, May 6th, and WFIN is giving you the opportunity to hear from the candidates before you cast your vote. This is WFIN News Director Matt Demchek. Coming up Monday, our candidate forum will feature the at-large hopefuls vying for a seat on Findlay City Council. Join moderator Chris Oakes and hear from the candidates Monday at 5 p.m. from 50 North on 1330 WFIN, WFIN.com, and 95.5 FM.
And now your daily download, the numbers behind the news and the statistics that shape our lives. The Pew Research Center conducted surveys globally in multiple countries around the world to determine the optimal ages for significant life milestones. And this I thought was really interesting. The data shows that on average, most people globally consider the mid-20s to be the ideal time for marriage and parenthood. The best age to buy a home? Well, that was quite a range, depending on, you know, which country we're talking about, ranged from the early 20s to mid 30s, depending on location. And in terms of retirement, most people globally said the late 50s was the optimal age for retirement, although, again, opinions fluctuated. So how do Americans feel about this question? Well, on average, in the survey of people in the United States, Americans believe that the ideal age to get married is 26 and a half. Age 26 and a half, the ideal age to get married. The ideal age to become a parent for the first time, 27.3. The ideal age for buying a house, 28.8. The year you should buy your first house. And as far as retirement goes, Americans say the ideal age is 61.8 years. So, yeah, that seems about right. Well, for nearly four decades, the National Disabled Veterans Winter Sports Clinic has helped many of our nation's most profoundly disabled veterans overcome obstacles and challenge their perceived limitations, all while encouraging a healthy, active lifestyle. Often referred to as Miracles on a Mountainside, this inspiring event brings together more than 400 veterans in Snowmass, Colorado for a week of adaptive sports. This year's event just wrapped up over the weekend, and joining us are VA recreation therapist and coach Alex Maitrey and one of the participants in the event, U.S. Army veteran C.C. Masick. And Alex, tell us more about the Winter Sports Clinic.
Yeah, the Winter Sports Clinic is a facilitated event by the VA and the DAV. We bring veterans from across the country to Snowmass, Colorado, and we challenge them all week in different sports, whether it's downhill skiing, cross-country skiing, sled hockey, anything winter-related from snow to ice. We're here to challenge them, support them, and watch them conquer the mountain.
So, Cece, tell us how you got involved in this program.
I got involved with my local VA in Augusta, Georgia, my recreational therapist, Suzanne Kenrick. She came into my room and wanted me to try something different. I'm from Columbia, South Carolina, so there's really no snow there. So yeah. It was definitely a challenge for me coming here, but here I am almost 20 years later having a ball.
And what are the events that you participate in, or is it, do you do all of them, or how does that work? How do you decide what you want to participate in?
Well, I have nearly tried all of them. The only thing that I haven't tried is fly fishing. But other than that, snowmobiling is my favorite. I like to do that basically the whole time that I'm here. I love it. We have sled hockey, we have curling,
yeah,
a plethora of sports that you can try.
And Alex, is that pretty standard that most of the veterans will try everything at least once? I mean, maybe gravitate toward one or two sports in particular, but is this one of those things where you encourage them to try as many of them as they can?
Yeah, we want them to try as many events as possible. Our main focus is skiing, being on the mountain. So we want to challenge them, whether it's Nordic cross-country skiing, downhill skiing. We even have a race day on the final day of the event where, you know, the veterans are just going at it, trying to beat each other's time. And then we have alternate activities. So they get to participate in those twice a week, whether it's curling, sled hockey, fly fishing, all the different events, they're able to experience it. Now, they can come year in, year out and try different events every single year, and we welcome that. We want them to challenge themselves and really get used to the snow.
So Cece, how many years have you been participating in this?
About 19 years.
Okay, and what is the big takeaway? What do you get out of this? Why do you keep coming back?
I keep coming back because I love my fellow veterans. It's such a sense of camaraderie. We share similar stories. And on the outside, you know, you don't get that everyday conversation with an able body, but being surrounded by disabled veterans, it's an amazing thing to have. With self-confidence, we can connect with other things that are out there in the world as well. So I fall in love with it because I love my veterans.
And Alex, is that pretty similar to the feedback that you get from other participants, the folks who come out year after year?
Yeah, absolutely. I'm originally from Miami. We usually bring a big team from Miami. And, you know, for being used to sand, we love being in the snow. We get a lot of returning participants, but also a lot of novices. So we want to focus on getting those new veterans, those new injuries out here to experience this event so they can develop new skills, build these new bonds, and really, really get them outside that box and find a new life and really, really thrive in it.
And Cece, what do you say to other veterans that may be thinking about participating? How do you kind of frame all of this as to what you can get out of it?
Well, I would tell my fellow veterans, don't think, just do it. sign up for it. Go to the website and try it. You never know. You may fall in love with it, as Alex mentioned. It may be your sport. You may take it all the way to the Paralympics. You never know unless you try. So go to that website and sign up, please.
So is this something that any veteran, any disabled veteran can participate in, just, you know, have to sign up? Or, you know, how do the athletes get there?
Yeah, so that's a great question. I would recommend that the athletes go to your local VA, find your local rec therapist, and tell them that you want to participate. We're here to help support them, support you to get here. And if there's any volunteers out there that are willing to support this event as well, there's a website, wintersportsclinic.org, and they can reach out to us on that website. But yeah, if you're a veteran out there, you want a new challenge, you want to experience something different, or have a new challenge, go to your local VA, get involved, find your new team.
It is just a terrific event, and if you've never heard of it before, we have the link on our webpage, as you mentioned, the website that you mentioned, where folks can learn more about for those who may be interested in participating or for those who would like to support in other ways. And obviously, you can only do this with with the support of those who make it happen.
Yep, absolutely. Take the village.
Absolutely. The VA recreation therapist and coach Alex Maitrey with us, and U.S. Army veteran Cece Masick. Thank you both for taking the time this morning, and certainly best of luck in continued events.
Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you very much, Chris.
And that will finish up our podcast for today. I want to thank all of our guests for joining us on the program this morning. Remember, you can get more information about all of the topics that we talk about each and every day on the show at our webpage, and that is goodmornings.net. Coming up tomorrow on the program, simple strategies to help you start building your nest egg for America's Saves Week. Plus, we'll preview the University of Findlay's annual International Night event. So until tomorrow morning, that is Good Mornings for this morning. Now that you've had a good morning, go on out and make it a good day. We'll catch you back here tomorrow.